Well, in our defense, I think that's the natural place where any Lara Croft discussion goes.
It's so true. You know, I think part of the reason why both the Tomb Raider series and Lara Croft as a character are so recognizable is purely her marketing.
Well, it's a classic case of marketing really paying off, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's that old story, isn't there, that the boob size was actually unintentional, that he entered the wrong number into the 3D modeling software or something. Complete bollocks, obviously. I mean, they could... Oh. Hi, Cookie. How you doing?
Well, luckily she didn't bark during the show. This is just the podcast. Little dog interruption.
Sure. Yeah, not like the podcast matters.
This is a little more freeform, baby.
Yeah, but yeah, if it was a mistake, it could fairly easily have been reversed.
Well, the story goes the creator of Lara Croft, the original lead designer of the first Tomb Raider game, actually left the company over the marketing of Lara. He didn't come back until Tomb Raider Legend.
Well, what kind of weirdo doesn't like success? That's what I want to know.
They were just going to make, the story goes for original Tomb Raider, that they were just trying to make like an Indiana Jones type game.
Fair enough.
But the original character design actually looked a little too much like Indiana Jones, and they didn't want to get sued. And so they said, fuck it, make her a woman.
Why not? Jill in the Jungle?
Boom.
Fine tradition.
Boom, boom. But then as the marketers got a hold of Lara, apparently it made the original designer upset because, you know, he was, of course, making a strong, powerful, attractive woman, but it wasn't just about the TNA for him.
Well, let's face it, it was going to be an attractive woman because all protagonists of video games have to be conventionally attractive, unless you're Mario.
They have to be.
So
they have to be, and we're seeing what happens if your female protagonist is not conventionally attractive right now.
Well, let's not make things too reductive.
No. Yes. Okay. So the sexualization of Lara Croft. Go.
Okay. I'll just go and sexualize Lara Croft over there now. I'll have a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks. No, you know, I was doing a little research, kind of reminding me of the older Tomb Raiders, which I haven't played in forever.
They haven't aged well. Didn't play terribly well, the old Tomb Raider engine. I mean, it was the fact that core design remained stubbornly stuck to the original engine and how it worked for so long was part of the reason why their publisher took the franchise away from them and gave it to Crystal Dynamics.
Yes.
Because they made Tomb Raider 1, Tomb Raider 2, Tomb Raider 3, Tomb Raider 4, Tomb Raider Chronicles, Tomb Raider
The Last Revelation.
Tomb Raider The Last Revelation, and I think there was one more after that, Angel of Darkness.
And then Curse of the Sword, The Prophecy, and Angel of... Oh, no, sorry, yeah, I'm looking at all the titles. Those are the Game Boy titles.
Oh, yeah, they don't count.
Those don't count, yes.
Their last one was Angel of Darkness, and then they got... It was basically very little had changed along the way.
Yes.
Lara Croft had longer hair and more rounded boobies, and that was about it.
Yeah, the world looked slightly nicer. And as the series went on, they got rid of a lot of the puzzles and made it more of an action-y game.
Yeah, after Crystal Dynamics took over and they made Tomb Raider Legend and Tomb Raider... they did a remake of the first one, which is
Tomb Raider Anniversary.
Tomb Raider Anniversary, just to add insult to injury.
And then there is the Guardian of Light, which is the top, like the isometric twin stick shooter.
Yes, and there was Tomb Raider Underworld. And I think that was the last one in that continuity before the prequels.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Tomb Raider Underworld. You are correct. And going back, like looking at this, I know the core design team did attempt to kill Lara Croft off because they were sick of making Lara Croft games.
Sherlock Holmes syndrome.
Yeah.
Because famously, Arthur Conan Doyle wrote Sherlock Holmes' death because he was sick of writing Sherlock Holmes. And then the fanboys of the era made him bring it back.
Absolutely. And so Tomb Raider 4, Tomb Raider The Last Revelation, features Lara's death. Lara died.
Implied death. They were a little bit wishy-washy about it.
Well, there was death. There, Lara got trapped in a tomb to be dead.
Yeah, fittingly.
Fittingly, but then Chronicles was actually just like people telling stories of Lara, like her friends at her funeral. Like, yes. Oh yeah, remember the time Lara was in a Metal Gear Solid game?
Yeah, it was an anthology game, and right. She was just alive again because he was the meal ticket.
Yeah.
When you think about it, Lara Croft was like the major British import at the time. There was a tying of Lara Croft to the British national identity for a while.
Was there?
Kinda. She was like something that the country could be proud of again after like the Thatcher era.
Is this a true thing?
Well, I do remember there was a certain amount of pride with Lara Croft being such a famous international sex symbol.
Sure.
Developed by this bunch of nerdy dudes from Bristol or wherever they were based.
Sure. And so like not only was it was she a British protagonist, but also developed by a British team.
Yeah. She was a cultural ambassador, a cultural icon.
Oh, okay. Well, then there you go, I guess.
And then the Americans started developing her and turned her into a whiny, whiny teenager. Whining because her severe injuries hurt.
Yes.
Which gets us to the topic of the debate, really, which is which was old Lara versus new Lara. We did it in a slightly sophomoric way, but...
okay.
I'm going to throw out what I've said before, that old Lara Croft was certainly much more lacking in personality and depth, but was a generally much more enjoyable character to play as.
100%. You know, I would much rather have my avatar be someone who is confident in their own abilities.
Yes.
I don't know what it is about the new Tomb Raider, about the year that it came out, about the men specifically who were in charge of that game and why they felt the need to punish their woman so much.
Well, we know why, because I think one of the developers was quoted as saying they wanted to make a game where you felt motivated to protect poor tiny Lara Croft, which is probably the wrong attitude to take when you're making a strong feminist game. I mean, Samus Aran never needed no man to protect her, except in that last game, which we don't talk about.
That one doesn't count. That's not a Metroid game. We pretend that one doesn't exist.
Women certainly aren't fragile little things, need to be protected by men and are constantly obsessed with babies. Except in that one game.
The amount of torture porn in the new Tomb Raider is staggering. I was like flipping through, you know, that YouTube does the compilations of all the cutscenes just to kind of remind me of the story. It's been forever since I've played it. And the amount of torture that new Lara goes through is unjustifiable. I think you need to like have a private investigator look into the men who were writing that story and check on their spouses.
And this is the classic issue that I brought up in my Last of Us 2 review, that a character suffering does not make that character interesting or deep or compelling.
Right.
That seems to have been the attitude, because there's no incentive to the suffering. There's no meaning behind it. Half the time she suffers because the ground just randomly collapses under her big fat ass.
Right, but suffering is shorthand for vulnerability, and so instead of a fully fleshed out character, they just slapped a bunch of shorthand on her.
Yeah.
Look at how hurt she is. Don't you feel sorry for her?
I suppose one could accuse the original games of not treating the dangerous situations Lara was in with the necessary seriousness, in that if you're stuck in a cave with a tiger, you will probably get horribly mauled, not gaily somersault around the room, shooting it with two guns.
Well, it speaks to the point of the debate, which is the tone of both of the games. The tone of the original Tomb Raider is a light-hearted action game. You're solving puzzles, you're running around in tombs, you're fighting tigers and bears and horrible legless monstrosities.
Yep, and every now and again you're back up against a wall and turn the camera around so you can get a really close-up view of her boobies. Well, you did when I was 15.
Exactly. Well, it was a fun game. They were making a game so the players had fun jumping around as Lara, and the new game, they don't want you to have fun. They want you to suffer. They want to torture you.
And because it's fun and frivolous and therefore not empowering ladies or something. But I've always felt that if we're talking about female empowerment, original Lara Croft is the empowered one because new Lara Croft doesn't actually have much in the way of agency.
Correct.
New Lara Croft, I mean, as I said in the video, this is the drinking game I mentioned in my ZP review of one of the new Tomb Raiders. You drink every time she expresses the fact that she has to do something. Like, she doesn't feel like she has a choice in doing something.
Right. Either she's trying to protect her own life, or she's doing something for her father or mother in the second one, I think.
Yeah. So the point being that I think a compelling character, what happens to them is the result of their decisions.
Agreed.
The changes they undergo is the result of the decisions they make.
Like, this is the classic kind of act structure is when a character makes a decision that changes how they feel or the direction of the story. The classic Luke Skywalker makes the decision to leave his planet and go out into space. Zaboom. That's his choice. Right.
Yeah. It's the call to adventure.
Ooh.
In the first prequel Tomb Raider, well, I guess she makes the choice to go on a adventure to look for her. What's he looking for in the first game? I've forgotten.
It's like her father's diary scribbles of a lost Japanese queen thing.
Right.
Right.
Right. She's going after it because it was her dad's legacy, and she feels she has to big up his legacy or whatever it was.
Exactly. And remember, none of that really matters because before they get to the island, their boat is crashed and she's like knocked out by the natives. And so, nothing. She makes no decision that's not like self-preservation or motivated by her father.
Yeah, it's just like a little Heath Robinson machine. What's the American version?
Heath Robinson's machine?
Yeah, I've forgotten it. You know, a machine that's like made of lots of little bits where one thing leads on to the next thing.
Rube Goldberg.
Thank you. It's the Rube Goldberg machine. You're just going from one trigger to the next.
Yes, and you're literally falling into the next area, stumbling to the next thing you're supposed to discover. So OG, original gangsta Lara, chooses to go to these tombs. Sure, she chooses to go in there to get rich and, you know, make herself famous, but it's her decision.
Yeah, that still tells you something about her character.
Absolutely.
I mean, she wants to be rich and famous. Who doesn't? We can all sympathize with that.
Sure, you know, sure, that's the thing. And again, it was more lighthearted. Sure, it wasn't taking itself seriously, but yeah, that was kind of the point of the game.
Yes, and the other argument, of course, is the Uncharted argument that Lara Croft, OG Lara Croft, is basically an unfeeling psychopath who spends all her time killing endangered animals and occasionally human beings so she can steal treasure and take it back to her house and just bask in the glory of having nicked it.
But old Lara is significantly less of a psychopath than new Lara. Old Lara, like if you look back at the original games, like Lara in the first Tomb Raider fights like three humans. Everything else is either an animal or like a Atlantean monstrosity. Mm. New Lara Croft kills hundreds of people.
Well, yes. I mean, nothing can quite... You can't really do cover-based shooting against anything but people, can you?
Right. Right.
You can't have velociraptors ducking behind boxes.
I mean, I guess you could, but that would take a little bit of the realism out of it.
I guess you could, and then you could call it Dead Space. Do you ever play the remake of the first Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider Anniversary?
I have not.
It's funny, because they're sort of starting to move towards that area of turning Lara Croft into a more realistic character. So it's the same plot, and you fight the same things, and again, it's the same thing where you shoot basically three human beings in boss fights. Mm-hmm. But every time you do one, there's always this sequence where they have Lara Croft just sort of look at her trembling hands in horror at what she has become. And then she just goes, well, can't be helped, and moves on to the next thing.
Anywho's, where's that treasure at?
Yeah. So I guess you could see they felt like they needed to move with the times. Is this an indictment of the times, perhaps? That it says something about the times we live in, that the insistence on having some perception of grimness or gritty realism in games is seen as something that needs to be had now?
It's not an indictment on the times. It's an indictment on lack of creativity,
I suppose.
A lot of this, a lot of new Lara boils down to that accursed, you know, Christopher Nolan effect where, you know, he tried to make a more realistic Batman and literally everyone followed suit and no one is having fun now. No one is allowed to have fun anymore.
Yeah, I think that's taking the wrong message from the Christopher Nolan Batman films.
Yes, and so the indictment of our time is a whole bunch of people took the wrong message.
I guess that's what always happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something does well and everyone takes the wrong message.
Well, and I think that's the same thing that happened in the Tomb Raider series as soon as Uncharted started to become popular.
Yeah, that was still trying to be lighthearted though.
Oh,
I'm trying
sure,
to think
but
what
like,
the game that kicks off games having to be gritty and realistic and people really, really suffering. I want to say Call of Duty Modern Warfare 1.
Ooh. Was that the one where you had to shoot the people in the airport?
No, that was Modern Warfare 2. But Ooh. Modern Warfare 1 was like set the ball rolling on all that kind of thing, where sure. they had a very gritty and realistic depiction of someone getting caught in a nuclear blast and dying slowly and hideously in the ruins.
Oh, okay, okay. And then that led to them wanting to have a similar iconic moment in the second one where you can mow down the innocents.
And I want to say that could be Patient Zero for video games suddenly being gritty, serious, and about characters suffering. Let me just check some years for a second.
I'm looking it up. Modern Warfare 1 was a video game that came out...
2007,
okay. And to go off of my current theory, Batman Begins came out in 2005, my friend.
Oh.
It all goes back to the Nolanization.
Bloody Nolan.
It's Nolan's fault. That bastard takes the fun out of everything.
But it was never about taking the fun out of things. It was adding a sort of... Well, it was adding a realistic take, but Christopher Nolan also had a sort of very poetic style to his work.
Correct.
Where all his characters sort of represent themes rather than our complex individuals.
Oh, yeah, no, and I don't mean to be mean to Nolan, as I enjoy him generally as a filmmaker. It's one of those things where I retroactively dislike a lot of his work only because of his fan base. But no, I think he's a very talented filmmaker, and he does a very good job of theming everything. But that was something that was very important to him for Batman Begins, is like, oh, how does Batman fit stuff in his tool belt? Let's have a whole sequence dedicated to, you know, the realism of this scene. Yeah. And then we get people who like say, oh, look how dark and gritty that is. Let's do that in our Tomb Raider.
I'm just looking up 2007 in video gaming.
Okay.
See if anything came before Modern Warfare that might indicate some
I think the
popularity of grittiness.
You wouldn't want to look at 2007. You'd want to look at like 2009, because that's when games would be trying to catch up with Modern Warfare, right?
Yeah, I was just looking at when The Last of Us came out, but that was 2013. So
That's when they took harsh and gritty to 11. But like if you look at 2009, we get Arkham Asylum, we get Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah, Modern Warfare 2 with the no Russian scene. That was the one where...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Grand Theft Auto 4. There's a thought. Grand Theft Auto 4 came around about that time.
Okay.
That was a very gritty game. Could have sort of unnecessarily for a Grand Theft Auto game. And that... Oh, that was 2008. Oh, Modern Warfare still winning.
Yeah.
But that certainly would have been part of the pattern, Grand Theft Auto 4. That was a very gritty and realistic trying to be game.
Mmm.
What else we got in 2009?
Yeah, I'm looking.
Oh, Bionic Commando. Bionic Commando from 2009, that was a classic unnecessarily gritty reboot or something. That was a real poster boy for unnecessary grittification. But I think that would be... That's well into the grittification phase.
The grittification.
Did you play that, the Bionic Commando remake?
Oh, God, no. I know. It looked horrible.
It was. It's hilarious. They're trying to make this the main character of the original Bionic Commandos, whose name was Radical Spencer,
yeah,
and whose gimmick was that he had a grappling hook on his arm and he fought Nazis with it,
mm-hmm,
and he wore sunglasses. And then in the remake, suddenly he's this gritty and haunted war hero who's tortured by his bionic arm, and he's tortured by the death of his wife. And I'm going to spoil the plot of that game now, because
please,
it's too funny to not spoil. But it turns out the ending twist is that his wife, instead of dying, her brain was put into his bionic arm.
Fucking what?
In order to make his bionic arm work. Yeah. I mean,
uh-huh.
It would have made sense if, like, the bionic arm had, like, an AI voice or something, had some kind of character to it. But no, it's just they said, oh, we needed to take the wife, you need to take the brain of someone close to you,
what,
to get your bionic arm to interface with your own body.
Oh, God.
That was how they made it work. And he thought his wife had run out on him or something, or died or something. And he discovered his wife had been in his arm the whole time. That was the gritty twist. Fucking hilarious.
This is a slight aside I would like to make here, but I am scrolling through the first Modern Warfare's Wikipedia page to try to find if it has any like ripple effects listed in its Wikipedia page. And I go down to critical response. The game story received a considerable amount of acclaim for reviews.
Certainly did.
In contrast, this is on the official Wikipedia, in contrast to later entries in the Call of Duty franchise, Ben Yahtzee Croshaw of Zero Punctuation gave the game a positive review.
Oh, yes, I found it now. Yes, there's a few game pages that quote me on Wikipedia.
I just thought, what a strange turn of events that we're talking about it right now, and it's talking about you. Life is a circle, my friend.
Apparently I said it featured less of the smarmy black and white my country tis of thee jingoism that turns me off most war games. Well, it certainly did, but it all came straight back in the subsequent popularity of contemporary war shooters, didn't it, games industry?
Oh, came back with a fervor.
Yeah, I'm going to say in video games at least, Modern Warfare 1 kicked off the gritty phase that the reboot Tomb Raiders was a symptom of.
Yeah, no, and a thing that has been now like kicking around in video games until only recently have we kind of rediscovered that, you know, big AAA titles can be fun again.
Well, actually, I'm looking up the 2007 releases, and there's a couple of titles that stand out that came slightly before Modern Warfare.
Uh-oh.
Where was it? Hellgate London? That was pretty gritty.
But it can't only just be gritty. It has to be gritty and commercially successful.
Right.
Those are the two key points, because once something is commercially successful, then people start trying to break down the components to monetize them easily without any creative vision.
Well, there was Manhunt 2 that year.
Ooh, Manhunt. The Manhunt series is very notable for its controversial grittiness.
It is gritty. I wouldn't say it's trying to be fully serious, though. I mean, this is a game where you get chased around by a big man with a pig on his head and a chainsaw.
No, I'm going with your first instinct here. I think that's usually the right call. Modern Warfare having, like, you know, one, just the war setting, the grittiness, and of course the one big scene, the big morally questionable scene, right? Ooh,
yeah.
Baby.
Yep. And of course, it was the whole contemporary war thing was much more relevant in the age of the post 9/11 wars in the Middle East. So, like all things in modern society, I'm going to blame the 9/11 attacks.
So many things come after.
It just made everyone really depressed, and they still are.
We've some of us still haven't gotten over it.
I hope you're happy, Bin Laden. 20 years and everyone's still depressed.
20 years and we still have the Patriot Act. Damn it.
Things were going so well up until then. Northern Irish reconciliation. The Millennium bug didn't turn out as bad as we thought.
You know, nothing but blue skies. That's nothing but blue skies and promises right up until 9/11.
I think it was the combination of 9/11 and George W. Bush in the White House. That was the problem. That was where it all started going wrong.
Yes. Yes. After after a very contentious victory, you know, one of the very few, not to get too far off topic, because of course this is supposed to be about Lara Croft, but and actually I was about to get more off topic. So back, boom, boom, pulling it back.
Oh shit.
We've been talking about Modern Warfare more than we've been talking about Tomb Raider, because you know what? There's not a lot to the game. There's just not a lot to any of the games.
No, but there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
And there's nothing wrong with a female character being attractive.
There's nothing wrong with a female character looking however the designers want her to look. There's nothing wrong with a strong, confident woman. I know something I've pointed to before is the Bayonetta series. I think Bayonetta as a character is wonderful. Another example of a strong, attractive, female-fronted series.
Have I ever told you about my theory for the difference between sexual and sexualized?
Ooh, go for it.
A sexual character is one could seriously imagine deigning to have sex with something. Whereas a sexualized character just has their sexual characteristics emphasized. And yet more often than not in such cases, they often seem very unsexual. Like they have no patience for the thought at all.
Okay, how do you have any examples off the top of your head of both?
Well, I would argue that, let's say, Red Sonja would be an example of a sexualized character.
Sure.
Because she runs around in the classic chainmail bikini look of high fantasy. But I wouldn't say she's very sexual.
Okay.
I mean, famously, like, her big part of her story is that she only goes to bed with someone who can beat her in combat.
Right.
She's part of that whole, no man can have this.
Classic barbarian fodder. Maybe he's falling in this category is Quiet from Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yes, there's a lot of token female characters in video games who they dress up in like skimpy gear, usually belly shirts, weirdly. That's weirdly common. And yet come across like saying, I will crush anything that tries to look at me funny in that sexual way.
Hold on, it's getting hot in here. I need to unbutton a few more of these buttons.
Which feels like mixed messages to me.
Absolutely.
Those I would classify as sexualized.
All right.
Whereas a sexual character is someone you could imagine actually having sex. I would say Pharaoh from Prince of Persia Sands of Time is a sensual character. And you have some implied sex with her in that game, but as part of what, in my mind, is one of the few actually good romances in video games.
Right. Sure. Okay, I'm with you here. And so, like, really, it's like, does the character earn their sexuality? Do the writers give enough of a damn about the character to, you know, give them like a motivation to be sexual, or are they just slapping some skimpy armor on them?
Yeah. Are they just eye candy for all the boys?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, actually wanting to have sex with something implies a degree of character and agency.
Well, and, you know, the early Tomb Raider games, you know, besides, of course, Lara's very outlandish proportions, I would say there isn't a ton of sexualization to her character besides her proportions.
Her character does have a flirtatious side, I'll say. She's flirty and quippy with the men she's having fights with.
And while that's true, nothing like her outfit, at least in the first couple of games, nothing about her outfit is necessarily skimpy. Like, you know, she's got shorts and a tank top.
Well, it's pretty skimpy, let's be fair.
Relative. Nothing compared to the later Tomb Raider games that have her, like, in a thong diving suit.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was going right up the crack.
Yeah, and so, like, they definitely amped it up as the games went on until, of course, they had to hit that hard reset button with the new one.
The prequels, where they had to show how grown up they were now.
look, she's wearing pants and everything.
I guess I should emphasize this point that I don't think any Lara Croft exemplifies good female characterization, but all for different ways, for different reasons.
Okay.
I mean, I would never classify her as great female characters in gaming. Mm-hmm. I mean, she certainly got the staying power and the marketability.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever notice, if you look at the original box art for the first Tomb Raider, it says featuring Lara Croft at the bottom?
Oh.
I mean, the character wasn't established. I mean, they were just assuming in the time it took you to look at the box art, you would become invested in the character. which was an odd thing.
Right. Well, like I said, the original lead designer of the game walked off of the project after marketing only wanted Lara, Lara, Lara. And so, like, I do wonder if they were planning on, like, the Tomb Raiding series to have maybe a bunch of different protagonists. Maybe, like, oh, like this Tomb Raider 2 featuring new character.
Oh, like that ever pays off. Remember when they tried to do Friday the 13th without Jason? It never works. No one wants it. People like continuity.
Yeah, well, and people like habits. They like the same thing. People like the same thing over and over and over again until they don't.
I suppose. But I feel like you couldn't have made a Tomb Raider game about someone other than Lara Croft after the first couple of games. It would have been false advertising.
I want to say even the second one, though. Like, even the second one, it was like... Even the second one said featuring Lara Croft.
Yeah, they all did, I think.
Yeah.
Because, hey, it's Lara Croft.
Tomb Raider 1 featuring Lara Croft, Tomb Raider 2 featuring Lara Croft, Tomb Raider 3 Adventures of Lara Croft.
Oh, yeah, all the way up into the subtitle there.
Yes, and then Tomb Raider 4 is just Tomb Raider, The Last Revelation.
See, yeah, the original Lara Croft, her shirt was a bit tight, and they were clearly overemphasizing certain assets, and they never really went into depth about her character. But she was fun. She was the fun protagonist needed to be. Because in that sort of game, the character is the adventure itself. It's the environments you go to. It's the things you find on the way. That's where the appeal lies.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sort of going the series long enough that you suddenly want to put the focus less on the adventure that Lara Croft is in and more on Lara Croft herself is where it starts to fall a bit flat.
Mm.
I feel like this was the problem with the last Uncharted game. You spend like several hours of it just following Nathan Drake on his dull little life. Because suddenly the focus was on the character rather than the adventure the character is in, and the character proves to be kind of shallow.
Yeah, 100%, but people get so attached to that character.
People get attached to anything they see enough of.
That's very
true. You put like a smiley face on your hand, they'll get attached to that.
Are you talking about Handsome Andy, my hand smile?
Exactly. I think he's a bad influence on you.
You don't know. Handsome Andy gives me good ideas. I'm trying to, right now I'm looking through the instruction manual for the PlayStation 1 Tomb Raider to see if Lara has any like, oh, here we go. Introduction. Lara Croft, daughter of Lord Hensingly. Croft.
Hensingly. Nobody's called Hensingly.
You're right. Henshingly.
Nobody's called that either.
Lord Hensingly Croft was raised to be an aristocrat from birth. After attending finishing school at the age of 21, Lara's marriage into wealth had seemed assured, but on her way home from a skiing trip, her charter plane had crashed deep in the heart of the Himalayas. The only survivor, Lara learned how to depend on her wits to stay alive in hostile conditions, a world away from her sheltered upbringing.
Okay.
So
that prequel thing, that prequel was actually telling the backstory that was in the original manual. I didn't know that.
Kind of. I think they tweaked the origins a little bit. So, you know, like the new prequel is Lara going purposefully on a tomb raid when she, you know, but then has to survive it. This one is just like, oh yeah, she's like a party girl. She's went to finishing school, but then shit got real.
The point is, that's not what the game chose to focus on.
Right.
I'm reminded of a piece of writing advice I was given once.
All right.
Is the story you're writing the most interesting time of the protagonist's life? And if not, why don't you show us that? I mean, it's not supposed to be a clever gotcha. There are, like, actual answers that make sense. But I think in this case, like, the story of the original game that we had was the more interesting story. Because
Absolutely.
We didn't have to watch some crying girly girl complaining about not having enough food.
That's very, very similar advice we get. I did before the lockdown, I do improv comedy theater here in Milwaukee.
Hmm.
And that's one of the big notes that's always given to kind of, you know, 101, 102 improv people is like, don't talk about the thing you're about to do. just go there and do it because obviously that's the fun part.
Yeah.
Like you can clear the scene, and instead of talking about the trip to Hawaii you're taking, why aren't you in Hawaii already?
I remember I was looking at a post, I forget from who, recently, where it was talking about why all these prequel Star Wars movies, like the Han Solo prequel and the Rogue One prequel, don't really work out.
Mm.
And the answer they gave was that the story of how Han Solo became Han Solo just isn't that interesting.
Yeah.
Because if it was interesting, it would have been the original film.
Abso-fucking-lutely. The interesting bit of Han Solo's life was when he decided to be a good guy in A New Hope.
Yeah, that's the bit worth focusing on.
Absolutely. No, and historically, famously, George Lucas had written kind of outlines for all 9 episodes of Star Wars before he finished writing A New Hope and eventually pared away like, no, it's not really important why Lord Vader's the bad guy. It's not really important why this happens. What's important is what we now know as, you know, episode 4, A New Hope. That's the meat of the story. Only later to go back up and pick up all those scraps that he decided weren't good enough.
I very much believe he worked out 9 films. It's very believable that George Lucas has always been the awkward high school sci-fi writing nerd.
famously, very similar stuff with Dan Aykroyd and the Blues Brothers. The original script handed over for the Blues Brothers was like a ridiculously long. The car, the Bluesmobile, was supposed to be like they got it, like they took a trip to hell to get the Bluesmobile, and like that's why it can drive so fast. Like there was all of this mythos surrounding the Blues Brothers.
Yeah,
and John Landis just smacked him and said, "No, we're not doing all this."
Filmmaking is the art of good editing, as many things are.
Absolutely, and so yeah, I don't know. Like to wrap this up is just as far as like their characters are concerned. I have to agree with you that neither of them have very compelling characters, but at least one of them was trying to have fun in their fun game.
Neither of them had compelling characters, but at least one of them knew not to focus on the character.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, she's got big tits and she's attractive and she raids tombs.
And she can do flips while shooting polar bears.
I mean, everything else follows from that. How can someone like her be in a position to raid tombs? Because she's rich, obviously. She's a jet setter. And she's mad. That's why she shoots everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just everything just comes from the starting point. Attractive lady raids tombs. Everything is just an excuse for that.
Was there in the first game, and I don't remember, in the first game, was there like her training in her rich person home gym?
Yes, there was an optional tutorial level which took place in Lara's home, which was sort of a tradition for the early Tomb Raider games.
Yes.
And it was, you know, it established the character without needing to establish a backstory. It's just, this is the situation they're in. This is the house they live in. This is the kind of person who would live in this house. A mad, rich lady.
Yes, and here's her doing gymnastics. This will be, this explains why she can do them in the tombs.
Yeah, and obviously the rich, mad ladies don't have much to fill their time, so she just exercises all day, and that's why she can do this shit.
Boom.
It all starts with rich lady raids tombs, and all the explanation is just the obvious explanation.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So OG Tomb Raider wins.
So in our suggestions for the next Tomb Raider, just make up a fun adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Set it somewhere cool that's impressive to look at. And just let's just not dwell on Lara Croft much.
You know, make it fun. How about instead of endless waves of shooting dudes in cover-based combat, you have some puzzles for us to solve. That could be fun. Like some tombs to raid.
And how about, instead of dudes, she has to fight endless hordes of very cheeky chimpanzees.
What?
Just the kind of chimpanzee who's so cheeky, you just hate them and want them to die. They run up, they pinch her bum, take her wallet, go up a tree, and you're like, oh, you cheeky chimp.
And maybe you don't have to. Maybe you don't have to shoot them to progress through the level, but if you want to shoot them.
No, you have to. You have to. This is a real asshole of a chimp. mean, it keeps showing her its bottom.
Throws poop at you. Oh, it's terrible.
Because you gotta have some villain, and then you just have an adventure through a really interesting scenery while chasing a cheeky monkey.
I love it.
There you go. That's how you make Tomb Raider fun again.
Make Tomb Raider fun again. We believe in you, whoever owns the right to Tomb Raider now. I don't think the Americans have it anymore.
Tomb Raider 12, monkey business.
Oh, yeah. Eidos Montreal is now making Tomb Raider. So, you know, the Canadians, they're a little more fun than us.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be in that country because it's so cold.
There you go. There you go. We did it.
That's why all their mounted police wear those silly trousers.
And we love them for it.
Okay, are we done talking?
I am.
Yeah, I'm done too.
All right, great. Then that's it. Thanks everyone for listening to the podcast that comes after Slightly Civil War. Remember that this episode was Who Would You Rather Raid a Tomb With? Original Lara versus new remake Lara over on the escapistmagazine.com, where you can become an Escapist Plus member to get our content ad free a week early. You can ask us the creators questions, or you can join us at a YouTube Plus membership where you can once again watch our content ad free and get special little emotes when we do our live streams. Those are all the fun stuff that you can do to help support us in making this content.
Yes. And follow us all on Twitter as well, and all the usual stuff.
Yes. Fantastic.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye, everyone.